Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we are opening one of the most unexpected yet foundational texts in Western thought, Michel de Montaigne's The Complete Essays.
Yeah, and it's fascinating because this isn't really a dive into external history or, you know, science in the way we often think about it.
Exactly. It's an exploration of, well, the greatest subject of all, the self.
And that's what makes his work just so revolutionary, isn't it? Montaigne didn't just write philosophy. He actually sort of invented the literary mechanism for dealing with uncertainty.
Oh, so?
Well, he used candid, deeply personal observation, his own flawed, sometimes messy experience as really the only reliable data set he felt he had to understand the universal human condition.
Okay, so let's connect that to today. What's the modern relevance for you, the learner, listening now?
Well, I think Montaigne offers perhaps the most effective shortcut to intellectual humility and practical wisdom.
Which we desperately need, right?
Absolutely. In a world just defined by information overload, constant change, he serves as a kind of antidote to dogmatism, to intellectual arrogance. He teaches us how to live well with doubt, you know?
Instead of constantly needing those fixed, absolute answers.
Precisely.
Okay, let's unpack the man himself then. Who was Michel Ecomme de Montaigne?
Right, so he lived 1533-1592. He was a French nobleman, trained in law, and actually spent over a decade really deeply entrenched in public life.
He wasn't just an academic then.
Not at all. He was a magistrate, later even the mayor of Bordeaux, definitely a man of action before he became primarily a man of letters.
And that life, that experience in law and politics, that sounds like the Crucible, doesn't it? He lived right through the catastrophic French wars of religion.
Yeah, imagine watching sophisticated, educated people committing just unthinkable violence against each other.
All in the name of abstract theological certainty. That must have left a mark.
A profound one. It really shaped him, gave him this deep aversion to fanaticism, to violence committed for ideas.
So when did the pivot happen, the shift towards writing?
The key point seems to be 1571. He was 38, and he retired from public life, famously carved out a space for himself in his library tower at his chateau.
What prompted that retreat?
It seems like a combination of things. The trauma of the wars, certainly, but also the huge philosophical void left by the death of his closest friend, Étienne de la Boétie.
Yes. That friendship was incredibly important to him.
It really was. And on top of that, he was starting to suffer from painful chronic kidney stones, a very physical reality grounding his philosophical turn.
Wow. So his pain, his grief, his disillusionment with the public world, it all kind of funneled into the birth of a whole literary genre.
Pretty much. He was this man of the world who chose introspection. And he invented the essay, which, you know, literally means attempt or trial.
An attempt at what?
An attempt to understand himself, really, by making his own particular, ordinary, often contradictory self the central, unending subject of inquiry. That was the radical move.
And this new genre, the essay, it allowed him a unique structure, right? The book itself, the complete essays. It's huge.
It's sprawling.
Okay.
107 chapters. And it feels less like a structured argument and more like eavesdropping on a conversation inside Montaigne's head.
Covering everything from huge topics like of death, of friendship.
To the wonderfully mundane, like of coaches, of thumbs, even of smells. Nothing was too small or too personal for his attention.
And the core revolutionary premise, he states it right up front, doesn't he? Addressing the reader. I am myself the matter of my book.
Exactly. He had this incredible insight that by meticulously detailing one individual himself with all his quirks and flaws, he could actually hold up a mirror.
Reveal something fundamental and true about all human beings.
Yeah. And the style itself is part of the philosophy in action. It's nonlinear. It jumps around. It's full of glorious digressions.
It really is. He might start talking about, say, military strategy, then drop in a quote from Seneca.
Then digress into his childhood habits, maybe end up discussing Socrates' virtue. It's associative.
And that reflects his core belief, right? That the human mind is fluid, and therefore, truth is rarely fixed or found by following some neat straight line.
Absolutely. The style is the message, in a way. And you see that fluidity evolve over time, too.
How so?
Well, the book spans two decades. In the beginning, book one, he's leaning pretty heavily on classical ideals, especially Stoicism, trying to achieve control through reason.
Like trying to tame the chaos.
Kind of. But as he ages, particularly into book three, he shifts toward a much more relaxed philosophy. He starts really embracing uncertainty, valuing the wisdom gained purely from lived experience.
So it's like the ultimate philosophical journal, almost.
Yeah.
A memoir that becomes a critique of society and the self.
That's a great way to put it. Shall we jump into that evolution a bit more, look at some specific examples?
Let's do it. Bukai, you mentioned the Stoic influence.
Right. Take the essay, "That to philosophize is to learn to die." That's pure Stoicism, really. The core idea being that if you constantly contemplate death, you kind of rob it of its terror.
Which frees you up to live more authentically now.
Exactly. But even early on, he wasn't just focused on reason. He was also keenly observing the non-rational self.
Like of the power of the imagination.
Yes. That one gives these fascinating early insights into the mind-body connection. He shares anecdotes showing how strong belief or imagination can cause real physical effects.
Like illness or even impotence, as he discusses.
Right. He was effectively saying, look, our thoughts aren't separate from our bodies. They're deeply, deeply entangled.
But the essay from Bukai that really stands out, the one that introduces his most radical perspective on humanity, is probably Of Cannibals. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. That one is a bombshell for its time. He examines accounts of the native peoples of the New World.
And completely turns the European idea of barbarism on its head.
He does. He really skewers European arrogance.
Yeah.
He points out that, okay, yes, the New World natives might practice ritualistic cannibalism of dead enemies.
But back home, the civilized Europeans are torturing and killing living fellow Christians nonstop over tiny religious differences.
Precisely. So he poses the question, who is truly the barbarian here?
It's such a powerful contrast. And it introduces this remarkably modern concept, doesn't it? Cultural relativism.
Absolutely. Montaigne suggests that their society, despite the surface shocks to European eyes, might actually be more natural, maybe more honorable, even more virtuous in its core social structure than the fractured, war-torn France he knew.
Wow. Okay, moving into book two.
Yeah.
This is where we hit the philosophical Everest of the collection, right?
Sure.
The Apology for Raymond Sibbald.
Yeah, it's massive and kind of deceptively titled. Ostensibly, he's defending this 15th century theologian, Sibbald.
But he uses it as a vehicle for something else entirely.
Completely. It becomes this monumental assault on human intellectual pride, on our belief that we can grasp ultimate truth.
How does he make that argument?
Systematically. He argues our senses are unreliable, our reason is arrogant and often leads us astray. We have no objective grounds, he suggests, to claim superiority over the animal kingdom.
He really questions why humans, capable of such incredible brutality and folly, think their fallible minds can grasp divine fixed truths.
It's a devastating critique of human presumption.
But here's a question then. If he argues that our senses and our reason are both unreliable, how does he avoid just falling into pure nihilism? Where does he ground his philosophy, if not in some kind of attainable truth?
Ah, that's the genius of his skepticism. It's not despairing ignorance. It's an active principle of humility.
Okay.
It's perfectly encapsulated by the motto that really defines this phase of his life. Caserge.
What do I know?
Exactly. It's not a statement of fact, but a continuous skeptical inquiry. It's designed to resist that urge we all have to jump to rigid, dogmatic conclusions, to keep questioning.
So it's a tool against certainty.
The ultimate tool against certainty. And that leads us into the final act, book three. This is where it gets intensely personal and I think truly life-affirming.
This is Montaigne's fully mature philosophy emerging.
I think so. Take it for repentance. He challenges the conventional need to regret past actions.
How does he justify that? Doesn't that sound a bit like letting yourself off the hook?
Well, his argument is for radical self-acceptance. He suggests that his past actions, even the flawed ones, were authentic expressions of who he was at that moment.
So trying to repudiate them is like trying to be someone else.
Kind of. He famously tells us, every man has within himself the entire human condition. It's like giving yourself permission to accept your own contradictions, your own past selves.
That's quite freeing.
Yeah.
And the defining conclusion of the entire work comes out of experience. Right.
Yes. This is the great celebration of lived, embodied wisdom over abstract theory. He writes so intimately about his daily habits, his diet.
And most memorably, his agonizing kidney stones. He doesn't shy away from the physical reality of his life.
Not at all. He literally writes philosophy with his body.
Yeah.
He connects his visceral pain directly to his philosophical practice. He argues we must attend to the needs and pleasures of the body. Food, sleep, managing pain as essential, valuable parts of a whole life.
Rejecting that old philosophical tradition that sort of scorns the physical.
completely rejects it, making this powerful final call to know how to inhabit your own being loyally, to be true to your whole self, mind, and body.
Okay, so looking across this incredible, sprawling work, what are the maybe three or four most essential universal messages that still really resonate today?
Well, theme one has to be that skepticism and intellectual humility we talked about.
Right. It's not about denying knowledge as possible.
No, not at all. It's a principle against dogmatism. It's the lesson that we really must try to tolerate differing opinions and hold our own judgments maybe a little more lightly.
Which, in today's polarized world, feels incredibly relevant. That skepticism reminds us certainty is often the enemy of peace and maybe even wisdom.
Couldn't agree more. Then theme two, I'd say, is the acceptance of human inconsistency.
Yes, his idea that we are fundamentally wavering and diverse, not some consistent monolith.
Exactly. We contradict ourselves. We change day to day, and that's okay.
And that realization, it reduces anxiety, doesn't it?
Right.
It releases you from that crippling pressure to maintain a perfectly flawless, consistent persona, either for society or even for yourself.
It's a philosophy that allows for self-forgiveness, which is huge.
Okay, a third theme.
Definitely the importance of judgment, or judgment as he called it.
What did he mean by that, specifically?
True wisdom for Montaigne wasn't just abstract bookish knowledge. It was practical, flexible judgment cultivated through actual experience.
So it's about applying what you know in the real world.
Yes. You can pile up facts endlessly, but Montaigne shows that prioritizing internalized applied knowledge, that flexible wisdom to navigate unexpected situations, that's what truly defines a well-lived life. Not just knowing things, but knowing how to use what you know.
And maybe a fourth.
I think the union of mind and body is crucial. His insistence on attending to the needs and pleasures of the body, diet, sleep, rest as essential parts of a whole worthwhile life.
A kind of early call for mindfulness, almost. Finding a healthier balance beyond just productivity or abstract thought.
Exactly. It's about living fully in the world as embodied beings.
And Montaigne, he packaged all this wisdom in some exceptionally sharp, memorable lines, didn't he? They're worth returning to.
Oh, absolutely. That defining declaration we mentioned earlier really sets the tone. I am myself the matter of my book.
Which signals that revolutionary shift, right? Yeah. Personal experience, not just history or theology, becomes the main subject of philosophical inquiry.
Precisely. Then there's one that captures his ideal of inner freedom. The greatest thing in the world is to know how to belong to oneself.
Mm. That speaks to independence, doesn't it? Independence from the pressures of the crowd, from society's expectations, being your own person.
Deeply. And perhaps the culminating wisdom drawing from those later essays, especially of experience, is this. It is an absolute perfection for a man to know how to enjoy his own being loyally.
Loyally, meaning authentically.
I think so. It suggests the highest spiritual and intellectual achievement isn't some transcendent state, but fully, authentically inhabiting your actual earthly life, embracing its pains and its pleasures without regret or trying to idealize it, just being truly present to your own existence.
That's powerful. And, you know, Montaigne really modeled a way of living that feels incredibly practical, even for navigating our modern complexities.
Definitely. Let's think about some real life applications.
Okay, application one. How about navigating information overload?
Yes. Use that skeptical lens of que sais-je, what do I know?
Yeah.
When you approach media, social feeds, whatever.
So instead of immediately reacting or getting fiercely passionate about some soundbite,
Montaigne encourages us to pause, question the source, ask ourselves what evidence beyond my own emotional reaction actually supports this claim. It fosters critical thinking and intellectual humility.
Good one. Okay, application two, cultivating authenticity and self-awareness.
Be inspired by his process. Start your own form of essaying. Maybe it's journaling, maybe just quiet contemplation.
The goal being?
To commit to understanding your own shifting motivations, your contradictions. But, and this is key, do it without harsh moral judgment. Observe yourself with curiosity, like Montaigne did.
In a third application.
Let's go back to Of Cannibals. Application three, developing empathy. We can use his principle of cultural relativism to question our own modern cultural biases.
So when we encounter people with different values from different backgrounds,
instead of automatic judgment, try curiosity. Recognize that our own customs, our own ways of doing things are just one valid way of organizing life, not the only way. Montaigne pushes us towards that broader perspective.
Those are great takeaways. As we wrap up, what stands out to you most? What's your final thought on Montaigne's unexpected legacy?
You know, what consistently surprises me is the democracy of wisdom he proposed. He shows us that profound insight isn't just hidden away in complex, abstract philosophical systems.
Where is it then?
It's painstakingly woven from the fabric of our everyday experience. From observing our habits, our pain, our friendships, our bodies, the essays feel less like a rule book and more like a companion. They offer profound questions rather than definitive answers.
That's beautifully put. For me, I think it was a call to embrace our imperfect, inconsistent humanity. That feels like such a relief. His journey of honest self-discovery shows that it's the most worthy pursuit.
And it leads not to some idealized, perfect version of the self.
No, but to a much more tolerant, compassionate, and genuinely authentic life right here on Earth with all its messiness.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.